How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI podcast.
Yes, it does. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? 5/20/5/22. Cranking it out. Podcast number 46. Welcome into the most meaningful crypto convo on the interwebs this evening. That's because it involves you. Welcome into the DOI podcast. Tonight we have some news. JP Morgan has something to say about crypto, singing a new tune. World Economic Forum taken over by crypto, and Brazilian developers taking crypto for real estate. How about that? We're also going to cover a little bit of Dow Planet NYC news. That's on June 24th, 25th. And we are going to dig into UHive, but we're going to do it together. Corey, what's going on?
Oh my goodness, Phil. Isn't it amazing to see JP Morgan coming around as if it's like all part of the story?
Get my blood boiling there. You know, I think for, for all of crypto history, they've been saying that it's, you know, that's a scam, that's bad, that'll never go anywhere, da-da-da-da-da, and here they are coming around. But we're going to dig into that story a little bit. First, Corey, we have the feds finds that the unbanked Americans are turning to crypto. And to that, we say congratulations. That's pretty awesome, right? That's quite the revelation there.
Yeah, congratulations for sure. And of course they are. I mean, because let's talk about it for a second. If you are unbanked, what do you do? Like, how do you get a paycheck? How do you pay for bills? Let's talk about that for a second, Phil. How would you pay for bills, survive?
Cash and barter. You know, that's really all you can rely on at that point if you can't deal with the banks. And for lots of reasons, people get excluded from the banking sector.
Really? Yeah, there are a number of reasons that people get excluded. But if you can only, you can only transact in cash, you're clearly not going to be able to take loans, or you're only going to be able to take loans that are collateralized off of something like your car.
Right.
At astronomical interest rates.
Yeah.
Which you can see the spiral of that. And if you do, let's say, not have cash and you receive a paycheck, I don't know if any of you have ever had to cash in a paycheck before, but the fees are outrageous.
Yeah. What are you paying? 7%, 8%, 9%, 10% to cash a check?
Yeah. And whenever you think about it, a lot of these unbanked are probably making a few hundred bucks a week, and in some cases less, but trying to spend all that money, basically getting their money, turning it into cash. If they're going to send that money, they have to send it super expensive through Western Union or something like that. Let's say that they have family out of the country and they want to send it. It's going to cost them a fortune.
Yep.
They can't get approved for many things because many things require credit, which you can't get if you aren't banked. Or they require some kind of bank references, which you can't get. So the only things they can get access to are the things that are at astronomical interest rates, or they just don't get access to the services at all. And with crypto, they've built entire ecosystems that allow you to essentially get many of the benefits, even down to getting loans, which, you know, Phil, you and I talked about crypto mortgages.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that's coming on hot all over the scene. I think in the next 2 years, that's going to be a big boost to that industry. So, you know, when we're talking about banking, you know, some of the reasons, what are some of the reasons that people become unbankable? And is there just a section, a certain group of people that just doesn't want anything to do with it? Or is it mostly that they've been pushed out from credit issues? And then if we start looking at that and we say, well, they're gonna want some kind of control mechanism, right? So is that where the social score will click in down the road, you think, or is that something that they're considering?
Truly. So I think it'd be very interesting, and Phil, if you can jump into the podcast chat to see, based off of the chat here, because where I'm at, I'm not able to do it so easily here tonight. But in the podcast chat, I'd be curious to see what you all think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a different time. And what is the need? Oh man, So they're going to have to figure this out, right? Because the banks are not going to be excluded from this, I promise. What's coming up, they are not going to be on the outside. They're going to figure out a way to bring it through their front doors and then turn it around just like they're doing now. So how is this going to affect them, right? I think you're going to see the innovation of banks coming out with their own wallets, right? And then securing them, backing them up, giving different guarantees if you use their wallet and their payment systems. That's really the way forward, I think, for them.
I would think so, too. And that all ties into, essentially, you can choose your, the same way you choose your bank, and you get different benefits, different rewards, different incentives for banking in that way. Those banks are going to have to compete in that space. They're going to have their own U.S. bank token or whatever it might be. I mean, maybe they do, maybe they don't because of regulations, or they support some type of the official CBDC of that government. But nonetheless, by being inside of that ecosystem, there has to be benefits. And to your point, there has to be a way to mitigate risk. Because if you're a bank and you want to get involved in these things, which you should, because the market is ever increasing in size and volume, and of course it would be, how do you offset risk? Do you do things like social scores, or do you just basically take everything that you did before and try to slam it the best you can into the Web3 world to probably mixed results?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, reflecting over to the podcast chat, Johnny over Crypto and Caviar, he said, did a bit on a 12-year-old going bankless after making $400,000 in NFT space, which makes complete sense, right? If you've already got, once you've already got those assets in that space, trying to bring them into a traditional bank is going to cause problems and liabilities, I would think.
Yeah. And, you know, an interesting concept is a spin on the Bitcoin ATM is, what if you could just as easily get cash out at all ATMs? And so the same way that you get crypto with cash, you could also get cash with crypto and just kind of go back and forth across the country through the entire banking network. And then they could charge you a fee if you don't have their crypto wallet. You know what I mean? So let's say if you're not a U.S. bank digital wallet for customer, but you're a Bank of America, or you're just like Consensus, like MetaMask umbrella, or whatever, like you're part of their banking network. And, or for that matter, maybe even have something that's not inside of a chain, but you can then you can get access to that wallet, you can turn it into cash that allows you to interact on both sides. And for that matter, you to send somebody crypto who can might need to use cash because wherever they're at, they can't buy goods and services with it. Crypto.
Yeah, it's definitely some innovations that are going to come in the next few years. So let's move on to the Bank of England. Our next story up here, the Bank of England governor compares cryptocurrencies to collectibles. And I thought it was very interesting. One of his quotes was, people collect all sorts of things. And I thought, how out of touch? I mean, I have not watched the video, but he could be 93. I don't know. It just seemed like such an out-of-touch statement to make.
Well, it's either extraordinarily out of touch or brilliant. And the reason why it could be brilliant is because if you were trying to avoid regulation or trying to reframe a conversation in Parliament for how something would get controlled and what kind of laws would be enforced on it, you're like, no, it's not a completely new financial ecosystem. It's not revolutionizing property rights or, you know, banking the unbanked or rebanking the currently banked. It doesn't do any of those things. It's just collectibles.
Well, you did catch it. This is the Bank of England governor.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go more towards out of touch.
Okay, fair. Fair. So your conclusion isn't that it's like a carefully manicured five-step move on the chessboard, but more just like he's looking at the chessboard and he sees checkers.
Yeah, 10-4, because you know, because your scenario puts out that these would be something that wouldn't be taxed, or they wouldn't be run through the banking system like that. And I don't think that's a possibility, right? I think they're going to figure out a way to bring it through there, and it's almost like he's discounting it, but you know, it wouldn't be the first time that a banker said something that was out of touch. You know, it, dude, here's something that's so funny to me. So maybe not funny, but sad. Very few times, you know, I've done a lot of projects in my life, and I've done projects where I'm running a lot of guys. I've done smaller projects. I've had businesses. I've had employees. Very few times in my career have I found that the problem is the solution. And it seems to me that the problem that we're having today was created by, you know, political leaders and bankers. And then at for some reason, everybody's waiting on them to come down with new regulations to fix that one and bring us all into a new utopian future. And it's like, well, when in life and in other situations, when is the problem the solution?
You know, that's a fantastic question. Like, I just imagine, like, the kid who came into the classroom and tore all the desks up and threw a chair through a window, and then, like, everybody sits down and goes, okay, so the room's completely destroyed. Timmy, I know you're really good at throwing chairs through windows. How do we fix the window?
Yeah.
You're like, wait a second here.
Yeah. Like, and I've been called out on it by some other people in my business where, you know, you get someone that comes over and installs, let's say he installs windows and the windows are crooked. And this is a clear example of somebody that did not know how to do what they were doing. Why would I call them back to fix this when they caused the problem? We obviously need to step up into someone else for the solution, right? That would be my motto.
Truly.
And it just seems odd that the entire market, the entire world seems to be waiting on these guys to make new rules for a new system so that we can all come out of the one that they screwed up. Just an observation.
That is, I think that's an astute observation. That said, we all know that at the end of the day, you can't build something that's destructionary and expect it to be adopted, because then at that point in time it becomes, and I know you're in agreement with this, at that point in time it becomes a war, you know, whether economic or otherwise. So that said, mm-hmm. we have to have these regulations. We have to have the rules. We just also have to be engaged in that conversation of what they're talking about and why.
Yes.
So whenever they are coming back out there, because sometimes, to your point, to take the analogy of the window installer, sometimes you don't have a choice, but the same person comes out and you're like, okay, look, the window was all crooked before, so let's talk it through together to make sure as you're fixing it that you fix it right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Fair analogy to what we've got coming up. And as a matter of fact, there was maybe 4 or 5 days ago, there was a story that came through, and it's basically they were highlighting that, I think it was July. Man, I wish I had the date in front of me, but the window is closing for conversation from the citizens of the United States to have input on the CBDCs that are coming out that the U.S. Treasury is looking at. That window is closing. So I know that we have information here in the Discord. If anybody is interested in interjecting their thoughts and would like to, there is at least another small window to get on and let them know what you think.
Do we feel like, and community here listening to us in general, those who are listening to us live on Clapper and on Facebook, or who will listen to us later on Spotify, of course, you hear iTunes and Podbeam and so on and so forth. But especially those who are listening to us live in the podcast chat, do we feel like we should jump into a conversation about CBDCs at length? And in particular, not just talk through what they are, but the kinds of regulations that they're talking about, the questions that they have, and maybe even end that podcast with clear next steps on how to interact with the central bank.
Over to the podcast chat. You know, I think we'll get some thumbs up for that for sure. I was flipping back to news and back into the podcast chat, but I think that CBDCs, I think it's going to be a necessity. Right. I think if we're going to try to stay educated and we're going to try to stay ahead of the game as a community, I think we're going to have to understand these because, like it or not, 90 countries around the world are already engaged in the conversation. Some of them are moving quickly. And some of them, it will take a few years, right? Especially the ones that are already adopting Bitcoin and other coins as kind of central currencies for themselves. It might take them a few more years, but a lot of the biggest players, I say by 2024, and that's what a lot of them are saying, will have something introduced.
2024 isn't that far away, Phil.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not at all. And we have a story coming up that actually alludes to something like that, I think. But let's hit the next story. JP Morgan backs Bitcoin to rise 28%, which I thought was really interesting. And we alluded in the very beginning, JP Morgan's been taking this position for, forever that I can remember of, maybe cryptos aren't safe and, you shouldn't get into these and these aren't secure investments and this kind of thing. And, this is the wild, wild west and this is mostly used for illicit activity. And now singing a different tune, 28% is what they... It was weird how they wrote it, though, right? JP Morgan backs Bitcoin to rise 28%. That's kind of pretty interesting how they're changing it up like that.
Yeah. Now, I do want to make the statement to unpack that a couple different ways. So first and foremost is whenever JP Morgan does something, even whenever they believe in something, they're backing it.
Yeah.
So, and they truly are. Like, imagine how powerful you would have to be like, oh, I like apples. And they'd be like, Phil Ward likes apples. He backs apples to increase. It's like, just because you're that powerful, you're like, he's backing apples to increase 4,000%. Like, JP Morgan is that powerful. We sometimes forget that these organizations are that powerful. And we just kind of accept it as a standard bit of nature and or don't even think about it. But truly, JP Morgan saying something like that,
it's big implications.
And huge implications for, heck, over the last 100 years at least, if JP Morgan got into something, they usually bent the world to their will. Even control the outcomes of both world wars. So at the end of the day, then backing Bitcoin is a pretty powerful thing. And what I would say is even more powerful is the fact that Bitcoin survived the entire time they weren't.
Right. Well, and as a community, I think we can kind of draw out some conclusions from this. And we can see that, we try to stay clear of actually giving financial advice. So I'm just going to tell you the way that I would perceive it or I would look at it. As these, let's call them the old money, right? The big money. This is the they hold the vast majority of the wealth of the world. As they start coming into this market, I mean, what does that do for the price of Bitcoin in the long haul? When players like JP Morgan are getting into it and they're going to start investing and they're calling for this kind of rise, what does that do to the price of Bitcoin? Seems to me that naturally it will become more and more stable the more of them that get onto it, at least for the short term of our lives, right? So it seems to me like that is going to be kind of a safe bet as we look at diversifying. For me, that's the way I would look at it.
I would look at it that way. And I'd also throw another interesting question out there, because for those who've listened to this podcast, I tend to always go at least 5 steps out, sometimes even more, which can be interesting to listen to at times as I am 30 steps ahead and then I unravel backwards how I started. But nonetheless, the question I would ask is, why now? Because if you think about anything that somebody's saying as a carefully placed narrative on a world that they're trying to create to their own benefit. So if you're JP Morgan, everything you say is carefully mapped. Like, you have a whole team of people that says, okay, what articles come out? What are you talking about? What can you say? What can't you say legally? And whole legal teams and stuff like that too. And they go, okay, how does this fit the narrative in a way that's going to coincide with the moves that we're going to be making over the course of the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years? And the reason why I think that's relevant is because if you start going, okay, if there is a narrative, what's their long-term play and why this at this point in time now? So are they seeing that perhaps maybe whenever they sat down and looked at the table to go, okay, how, look at the market as a whole. Things are tanking. Things are going here, there, and the other by and large. Granted, it's up a lot from where it was years ago, which people I think need to remember before they think that we're going into some massive crash. Right. But also, too, down significantly, you know, you're looking at NASDAQ and Dow Jones and all that from where it was at from stocks. But you're looking at all this, and you, of course, crypto is going down too, but it's also going down in a correlated pattern to the stock market. And if you're JP Morgan, you're going, okay, how do we create an investment vehicle that we can take out of the losses that we're having and then create returns? You could start building a narrative and then start moving things over, and then by them getting involved, they can come in, control a lot of the markets, which are already doing anyway. 2/3 of all of cryptocurrency trading is done by large investment institutions, only 1/3 of retail investors. And a lot of people don't recognize that. So they could already be jumping into the market to kind of make this long-term play. So the question is, long story short, back to the first one, why this, why now? Why now? They've waited this long. What made them change their tune? Not just that they changed their tune, but why?
Well, if you're looking for an answer from me, I'm going to say it's because we are in I hate to say things that are just provocative, but I don't think that it is. I think that we are in the last days of the U.S. fiat dollar, or the strength of it anyways. And as we're coming to the end, there has to be a shift. There has to be. And I think that kind of the writing is on the wall, right? We're dealing with inflation now. There's some that speculate hyperinflation can happen. I'm not really an alarmist, and I think what will be, but we can prepare ourselves for it. And this is one way, by looking at what they're looking at to be the next stable investment.
Truly. And I think that that is helpful to note, because no matter how you feel about JP Morgan as an institution, it's just a group of people trying to figure out how to survive for centuries. Yeah. And these big banking institutions, make no mistake, have survived for some of them well over 100 years, some of them hundreds of years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And we know that as a species, and I'll speak for myself and maybe for a lot of other Americans at least, our attention span has dwindled over the years. And there has to be a shift in our thinking, right? If we're going to secure our posterity, if we're going to secure our children and our grandchildren, and we're going to secure a way of life, there has to be a shift in the way that we think. And we have to quit being short-sighted in thinking about tomorrow and the next day. And we have to start thinking about 10, 20, 50 years away, 100 years away. That's something that we have to do collectively if we want to change the way we're doing things now. That's my thought.
That's my thought as well, too. So at least in the long-term thinking, it's a much more complicated conversation about where we're at as an age of an empire, at least for those in the United States. Clearly, we are still the world power, and there are things that can be done to maintain that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you diversify your risk if you're a large banking institution like that, and you put it in place, you make those long-term moves. So when in doubt, you can probably follow them, because the odds of them failing, putting billions and billions of dollars into where to, you know, investing their time and energy and resources and data into where to invest even more billions of dollars, or sometimes trillions of dollars, chances are pretty good that if you just kind of follow along with them, you'll probably be okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, in other news, the World Economic Forum is taken over by crypto firms promoting rapid adoption. And I thought this was really interesting that they're basically talking, the World Economic Forum came together, and basically the talk of the town is cryptos and in early adopting it fast. And so this is becoming the focus of their conversation. And if we just watch and see what's going on, and you watch what they do, you can listen to what they say if you want to, but watch what they're doing, because that's not going to lie. their actions aren't going to lie. And when you see this kind of stuff happening, the pressure that they're receiving, and also just the influence of these big markets, and they know what's happening, it's starting to take over the conversation.
You know what I'd really love to see, and it just hit me as you were talking about watch what they do. I mean, of course you can listen to what they say, that's relevant too, but watching what they do, I think, is a bigger key determinant. I would agree with you. For those of you who haven't seen it before, there was, I don't know if it happened inside the Wall Street Bets group or if somebody just, you know, really made sure that it got the awareness in there, but there is a tracker where you can see all the stocks that Nancy Pelosi gets involved in. Yeah. When she buys, when she sells, and of course she outstrips the market mostly, which there's a whole political dialogue or moral, ethical dialogue that goes along with all that. But nonetheless, there is.
I can break that one down for you pretty quick if you want to.
probably for the best we don't. But nonetheless, Bill, what do you think if we had something like that, except for it tracked political leaders, not just in their moves with stocks, but in crypto? Yeah. Like the same way that we have whale watchers, like we actually got to watch what our political officials are doing and see where they're putting their crypto. Are they buying? Are they selling? What things are they holding? What kind of assets? And then we could try to take those metrics. I would really love to see that, what that looks like, especially right now.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to that point, a lot of these large institutions, because they're publicly traded, and then obviously governments for quote unquote transparency reasons, they have to report when these things are purchased, right? So we can know this is information that is readily available. It's often in the news. We'll talk about it whenever it happens and it comes up in the news. But I think there are ways to really find out almost instantaneously when these kind of purchases are being made, especially on a big level like that.
Yeah, I think that would be, perhaps it wouldn't be as instantaneously exciting as seeing a whale move, you know.
It won't, but like
B-Man 70,000 Ether.
Hey, B-Man just pointed out that, you know, the blockchain makes that possible for us, right? And that's exactly right. They're not going to be able to really hide these, so it gives us the ability to watch and see what they're doing and when they're doing it.
Well, unless they use tumblers or privacy coins or shell companies or, you know, so on and so forth, because they have been known to do those things at times.
You mean hiding stuff, not being transparent and inclusive? No, I don't believe what you're saying, Corey.
So to that point, I think that we could get lost in this one, but the long story short is that I watch what people are doing. Watch what people are doing. But especially now, if you're thinking about how do you individually mitigate risk, if you can, as on an individual level, diversify in whatever it is you're a part of, things that, and of course, only invest what you can afford to lose, but do so in a way that is, it's hard for you to out-research large institutions.
Yes.
No matter how smart you think you are.
Yeah, or out-resource them, right?
Because out-resource, yeah.
If they're invested in something, you got to think about who has an influence on news media, right? And stories that are being pushed out. So, you know, you can draw some conclusions there. If they're heavily invested in something and then there's a ripple or a wave, well, they're going to do everything they can to shore that up, right? By talking it up, by investing more into it, by asking other partners to invest into it. So to me, it seems like it will add stability to whatever they're going to get into, at least in the short term, you know, 20, 30 years, 40 years.
So our part in all of this as the DOI Foundation is to make sure that as this process moves along, that we make sure to stay informed, educated, and engaged to make sure that this stays impactful, ethical, and sustainable for all of us, because without that, it'd be pretty easy for these things to happen. And, you know, of course we need to protect ourselves individually, you know, diversify, but collectively we can make sure to be a part of this discussion, especially as we grow and our voice becomes louder and more widespread.
Yes, Corey said trigger word engage, which made me think about all of our fans over on Clapper and on Facebook. Now, we see you lurking on Facebook when you're there. If you would love to come in and engage with us at the Discord channel, you can come into the podcast chat. You can ask questions. Hopefully, you'll get answers tonight because I'm bouncing all over the place. But we would love to have you come in. So moving on, Corey, Brazil's moving in the way of a CBDC. They have teamed up with Bitcoin and Stellar to have joined forces to develop a viable product as part of Brazil's effort to launch a CBDC in 2022.
Wow, 2022.
That's not very far away.
I mean, I kind of feel like, what is that? Like, that's only like a year or two away, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're here, right? That's there. Yeah. We're here.
Wow.
Pretty interesting. And with Bitcoin and Stellar.
Yeah. And I've always been a fan of Stellar. And that actually came up in a previous podcast. I believe, Aridal, you are too. But to that point, Stellar has some pretty interesting infrastructure for helping large-scale organizations, communities, governments to build. And I'm surprised just because, well, I'm not surprised at this point in time, but I'm surprised that the capacity and capability that they have to be such a major player, that they have the same volatility as any other meme coin as the market goes up or down. But I'm sure that will change over time as people start to understand the true utility of certain projects or the lack of utility of others.
I think so. And there's always going to be swing in a market, right? Even if it's declared, even if Bitcoin is declared the new gold standard, and we've heard that from a couple different places as the crypto gold standard, gold goes up and down, right? So there will be some fluctuation, but hopefully that will help stabilize it a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully so. I mean, you have something like Stellar, it can, gosh, go up or down 200-300%. And that's mind-boggling, considering at the end of the day, they're still back there building stuff. They're helping to build CBDC systems for numerous governments. And it would just have to be wild. Like, it's like at the end of the day, you're over there and like you and your team are building and making something meaningful. And then all of a sudden, like, it's the coin price is bouncing all over the place and it has no attachment to whether or not you're still out there making something valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the reason that they're, I think the reason they're able to sustain possibly is because they're doing other things other than just holding the coin, right? Which is, you know, full circle is a little bit about, that's a little how we're approaching it here, right? With the DOI coin and the DOI Foundation, that the DOI Foundation, even in hard times, even if we go into seasons where cryptos are not moving well or where the markets are tightening up, that the foundation will still be at work. Right, we'll still be doing our mission and fulfilling it and setting it up for when times are great to be able to fulfill it.
Truly. And I know that all of us at this point in time, looking at the names in the podcast chat here, and I'm sure many of the people that hang out in Clapper and Facebook and listen as well too, already know this, but we have to make sure to communicate it outwardly whenever new people come into the community, is that because we're building something, we're less worried about following along with token metrics, which in the short run could probably be confusing to people who are just wanting to pump a coin to the top and then hop or whatever. But at the end of the day, as long as we continue to build real infrastructure and scale that and provide this glue to the ecosystem of making crypto matter and meaningful and buying for the people, so no matter what happens with the crypto revolution, it's going to impact people in a meaningful way. If we're building that infrastructure, that ecosystem, building our teams and our tools, we're going to continue to become more and more valuable to everybody involved. And I think that there are a lot of projects out there that are going to have the same conversation. They're going to have to learn to decouple from the instantaneous moment to moment, what are you seeing in the charts, up, down kind of thing. And then eventually, hopefully, people stop watching the charts in that same manner, and they learn to start looking at long-term utility.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a different approach, right? And once we decouple from that, you decouple from the emotional stress of watching something go up and down. If you get involved in something because you know that the mission is right and the vision is correct, and then you have some ability to not watch something every day, because that's stressful. I think everybody here knows that's not my personality. I've said it many times. I don't watch the markets like that because that's too much added stress, right? What we can do is what we can do, and we can keep moving along, and the markets will do what they do, and then we'll adjust. But I can't watch it every minute of every day. It would drive me crazy. It would drive me absolutely crazy. So we are in just a couple minutes, we are going to jump into a conversation about UHive. But right now, we got a couple more stories that we want to talk about. Grayscale wants to, they basically want to get the SEC approval on a Bitcoin trust ETF. And I think that this is a big move when this happens, when they get the approval, if they can get the approval. This is big because I think it is a bridge allowing some of that, I don't know what else to call it other than old money, right? It's the fiat system being able to come in and bridge into the crypto system through an ETF, which is something they are already familiar with using.
So let's pause for just a second, because that might sound like a bunch of gibberish for someone who had no idea or is trying to learn crypto for the first time, right?
Agreed.
You might be like, a Bitcoin ETF trust. You're like, it's like you had like whenever you roll the big grate and the numbers pop out for Powerball. Right. It's like you did that with like words. and we definitely get that. So if you're new to this journey, you're listening to the podcast, you know, kind of for one of your first times, or in general, just trying to wrap your head around all this and your 50 podcasts in. So what in the world is a trust, Phil?
Well, a trust is something that is developed when somebody puts something of value and they establish it for the benefit of somebody else or for another group. So for instance, if you were going to leave your children money, you were going to put it in a will, you could put it into a trust, and you could put that money into a trust, and you could name them beneficiaries of the trust, and then they would be able to benefit off the proceeds of that money in the trust.
Brilliant. So why do you think that having a Bitcoin ETF stands for exchange traded fund? So it allows you to basically take Bitcoin over a centralized, not a DEX, which is a decentralized exchange, over the standard exchanges, and to be able to create a pool of funds that they establish the Bitcoin as the funds into a trust. Why would that be valuable? If you were, let's say that you were an institution trying to figure out where to put $500 billion, which, by the way, sounds like a lot of money, but for old money, if you look at all the different pools of funds around the world, $500 billion is actually surprisingly inconsequential.
Right.
So let's say, Phil, that you were trying to put $500 billion somewhere. Why would it matter to you that you could now legally, inside the confines of a governance structure that could be protected and defended, be able to put money into a Bitcoin ETF trust? Like, why would that matter to you?
Well, you just kind of spelled it out. Right, because it can be trusted and it can be protected by the kinds of rules and regulations that they want to see. And the other part of it is that it will come up on their radar. So if you are just a traditional investor and you don't really know anything about crypto markets, you know, this is still a very new market. And if you don't understand them or know much about them, you may be looking at it and not interested. But then you see this pop up on a radar screen that you're familiar with. And you understand this screen, and now it's presented to you for the first time in this way. And I think that will be one appeal that will bring that kind of money in.
So then the question I would have is, how long do you think it is, Phil, if you had to just guess? And I know that you have no way to answer this question as much as anybody else does. But at the same time, how long would you guess until there's an ETF trust that isn't just Bitcoin, but an assortment of different kinds of cryptos regulated?
I would say 2 years and maybe a couple of months off the top of my head. No.
Hey, that's very specific.
Yeah,
you said it here.
That's right. You heard it here. I don't think it's going to be that long. I think when the first one jumps in, based off of the success of that, there are going to be other organizations that want the same thing. You're going to see it pop up in Europe, you know, in the Canadian market. You're going to see it all over the place. And it's going to have to, right? There has to be a shift. We know that there's a shift coming. We can see what they're doing in the background and establishing the ways to do it. But the shift hasn't happened yet. And it's not going to happen before that backbone is set up, right? Before the roads, so to speak, the entry into it is set up. And right now, that's what's missing in the crypto markets, in my opinion, is the entry point. It's complicated right now. It's a little cumbersome. It's not well understood. It's not well explained. And then I think when these bigger institutions come in, you're going to see that kind of thing shift. And the entry point is going to be kind of painless.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, Phil, is there anything else that we should talk about before we get into UHive? Because I feel like that's going to be a pretty interesting education and conversation.
No, I think we could jump into that. So we are going to actually ask, B-Man Jay is going to come up. We asked him if he would be so kind as to come and join us this evening. We've got some stuff that we're going to throw into the podcast chat. Some informational stuff about what we're getting ready to talk about. We're going to talk about UHive, which is a social media platform that is set up to, well, we're going to dig into it, but it's set up for the creator, you as the creator, to be able to own your rights, to own your property, right? And UHive is a DAO, correct, Corey?
It is a DAO.
Okay. Okay, B-Man, it is a DAO. So we're going to jump into that conversation. I think Corey's throwing some stuff into the chat here. But let's take 1 second before we go into there. You know, you guys, on June 24th and 25th, the DOI Foundation is going to be in New York City. That's right. They're taking us to New York City. We're going to be at DAO Planet NYC. It's on the 24th and 25th. This is going to be a really action-packed event. There are going to be a ton of big DAOs there. Harmony DAO is going to be there, among a lot of them. It's going to be a really good conversation going on for a couple of days. So if any of you would like to come up and join us, come on up. If you know somebody that's in a DAO, spread the word to them that this is somewhere that they should be. And that's pretty much it on that. Come on up and let's shake hands. So let's jump into it. Who wants to go first, Corey?
Yeah, so what I would say is perhaps, so full transparency here, I'm having to do this podcast from my car. Not a big deal getting some tests done, but my daughter's in the hospital right now working through some stuff, trying to figure out what's going on, possibly appendicitis. So I can't actually, like I normally do from a separate device, upload into the podcast chat or even see the podcast chat because Discord kicks me out. So that said, Hakeem, if you could drop in.
Yeah, we're already there. He's already got it in there for us.
Awesome. I couldn't even see it. So talking about UHive, first and foremost, I hadn't jumped into UHive up until this point of kind of digging into, okay, where do we go to have this social media platform for the people, by the people, where people who use it can be incentivized, can be rewarded. People who create on it can be rewarded. You know, where do we go with this conversation? Because clearly we wanted to try to find that in other places. We've been having that conversation in other platforms that we won't mention, but, you know, kind of seeing that certain things are stalling. So in looking for that, we found UHive, and they clearly have put a lot of thought and energy and money into developing a very clean looking platform. So I thought it made sense to dive in. So for those who don't know, I didn't know, I downloaded UHive for the first time. You can get it on Apple. You can get it on Google. It's a pretty slick app. It's easy to get set up. It's easy to use. It allows you to, of course, have social media interactions like you normally would, but also to be able to, as a creator, create NFTs and sell them. You can even also to have metaverse land. So you've got space that you can set up these spaces where you can have land that you, like we talked about, sand, where you can build that out. And it's a pretty awesome, simple to use platform where you can actually get started with it. So that said, B-Man, I dove deep into things as best I could. Tell us a little bit about your experience with UHive.
Well, you pretty much explained everything. So, yeah, as a creator, I just found it, and I was like, well, I'll check it out. Maybe I can add some videos there, see what's going on, build a following. And then as I dug into it, I found out it was actually a DAO. And if you spend up to, they say 4 hours, but I found if I spend up to at least 2 hours on the app, they'll pay me, I believe it's 40 of their coins just for being on the app for 2 hours. And then if I interact, I either post stuff or reply or like or dislike different posts from other people, then I'll get up to another 10 coins there. And then you can also buy coins, which, of course, the market's down right now. So I think like $10, it gets you about 6,066 coins. And it's at, I think, a little bit more than a 1/10 of a penny is what the stock's at right now. So you can make money at this app just by cruising around. They're trying to compete with Facebook, and their goal is 1 billion users, which at first I thought that was kind of high, but then, you know, I go with some of these other apps and they have over 3 billion people using the app over in the Middle East. So 1 billion's nothing.
Yeah. Interesting. And so their focus is kind of more on the creation of content, but also securing the ownership of it, right? And not being able to just the information not be given out or sold out from underneath you, but you actually having control of it, correct?
Yes. And it's, you can just go on there and cruise along like Facebook and have your friends on there, and, you know, you'll follow people or like people or, you know, just keep in chat with them. And you're trading your time on there, which is getting you paid. But it's really good. And Johnny just said in the chat, there's free spaces there or there's paid spaces. I have, I think, 12 or 15 different free spaces. And the more content that you put on there and the more people that come to it, the value of your space goes up. So your land in the metaverse goes up as you get more and more followers. And they'll tell you monthly how much your space is actually worth. And then you can either work on pushing it out there more or just don't care. So you can make quite a bit of money. They also have an ambassador program that I'm an ambassador for. And I get a little bit more money for when you guys sign up underneath my link, which I put it up there much higher in the chat. But not to push myself, but you can, you know, if you, then they just started a bastard or a affiliate program just recently. And if you sign up, I think it was like 1,000 people, and then 600 of them actually put money into the app where you're buying the coins. And if they do that monthly for the year, you'll make like $82,000. Now, I think that's really off, because if you get 10,000 people in there, maybe 200, or you send out 10,000 invites, 200 people might actually sign up. And then only, you know, 4 of those people might actually put money into that, because it's usually a 2% rule. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty good as far as I like it. You don't have to just use it as Facebook scrolling through the your feed. You can actually go into the metaverse and spin around and pick a certain area like pets and animals and click on there, and then you can scroll through adjacent properties and you can check out different people by just finding them that way. Go back to the metaverse, and it's like flying through space. You can click on automobiles and then see everything that has to do with all the different spaces that are automobile related, or you can just go to different there's many different ideas in there.
So hypothetically, you click on an automobile space. Are these spaces a place that you can join? Like, do you have to pay to be involved with their group, your Hive coins, or is it kind of open to anybody?
No, it's free. So, like, I have one where I post all my automobile pictures, like my own cars or other stuff that I find on it.
Okay.
And if you just follow me, you just click on it, you follow me, it's free. And then you can, every time I post something, you get alerted that, you know, I posted it.
Okay. Oh, I see AirDial put threw up your user code in there. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Johnny's got some things to say too. He also is in the UHive organization. Says the invite system is a little glitchy. And also that he's alluding to that your social score is based off your followers' scores and your content. So if you have scammy followers, it will affect your score. And then he's also said he's invited a couple people in, got paid on one of them, didn't get paid on the other ones. So interesting. It's kind of a new app, right? It's only been around for a couple years. Does that sound right?
I think it's only been around about 14 or 15 months.
Okay.
So they've done quite a bit in that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the glitchy is on, you know, if everybody in here went and used my code, I might get like three people that actually show up on my feed.
Interesting.
And you can actually gift people in there too. So if you really like somebody's post, then you can go ahead and click on that and send them a gift. So that gift will give you your coins. The NFTs, you can only list three at the moment. They're working on doing more, but you can only list up to three.
Okay. And is that three at a time, meaning you could take one off if it wasn't having any movement and you could put another one in its place, or is it just the three you put up, that's it?
You can put up three, so if you sell one, then you can put up another one, or if you burn it, you can pull it down.
I see. Interesting. Man, times are changing, aren't they? So there's so many places that are getting into the metaverse scene. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out in the years to come.
And
so Johnny, one of the things that... Oh, go ahead, Jay.
Well, Johnny said there's a one-time fee for the NFTs. When I did it, I didn't have to pay, but that may be me because I'm on an ambassador like our Guardians. But you can apply for that for free. You can apply for the affiliate for free. And there's some other thing that they also do. And I'm on every one of those tiers just because I've been around playing with this so much.
Yeah, interesting. Sounds like we might need a DOI space in one of these metaverses.
Yes.
That it does. We could put some of those doinicorns that you made too. Maybe one of them NFTs would go somewhere.
We need a corporate boardroom with a huge round table.
It's the biggest round table. Yeah. It's like the entire metaverse is one giant table. Like people are so far apart from each other they can't even make eye contact.
Well, you can zoom in. It's the metaverse. You can just get up and fly and sit right in front of the speaker while he's speaking and then go back to your seat.
Fair.
Yeah.
And I can imagine people flying around in the middle, flying through each other the whole time, like chaos.
No, 6-foot rule, bro.
6-foot rule. 6-foot rule.
They'll be flying. Yeah. They'll be flying through anybody.
So one of the things I thought was really cool, because with UHive, I could tell the theme is that if you're building something of value, your space, your creations, your data, because if you're in a social media space, like what you're interacting with, your time, that's like that's valuable. You should be able to be rewarded and compensated for it. I found that was really, well, clear that that's meaningful to society. But I also found an interesting curveball is that I didn't get a chance to play around with this, B-Man, but have you had a chance to see what it's like to play around with the incognito space? Because I saw that, at least I heard that you could whenever I was digging into it, that there are some spaces where you can be off-chain, where you can do things you can say things in a space and in a way that isn't going to be recorded forever. Do you know anything about that?
No, I do not, but I will be looking at that.
Johnny says he believes those are paid spaces, which makes sense.
Yes.
You're going to pay for your privacy.
Hey. and if there's a couple different types of futures. There's ones where, like, you don't get paid and you don't get privacy. There is one where you get paid and you get privacy. I mean, I like that one. And then there's, like, if I had to pay for privacy, I would accept that. As long as it's affordable for everyone.
We already do.
And that may be why I don't know about it, because I don't pay for anything. I want everything free. Yeah.
Well, hey, that's Google was the main initiator of that, basically you're the product free service kind of model. They figured out, how do you offer something worth billions and billions and billions of dollars for free? They make sure that they monetize you. So
thanks, Google.
It's pretty, yeah, I mean, it's pretty appealing business model. I mean, I like stuff for free too. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's always good and bad with all these models, right? You can't, nothing is perfect. And we can, there's utopia is a dream, right? It's fake. That's not going to happen. And so just like with the fiat system, it allowed massive growth. So good and bad with both of them, right? Without that system that Google created, would we have seen the massive growth? Probably not. If everybody had to pay to go on Google, and you had to register, and you had to give up something for access to it, then it certainly would not have grown the way it did. And because of its growth, look at the innovation that's come out of it. So we can always find a bright spot in anything that we think is not so great.
Early. Yeah, I remember the days we had to pay to get on the internet. Now we're talking about YouHive, you know, where it's an app that pays you to use it. Like, that's clearly the exact opposite end of the spectrum. And I think that blended approach, although we're still working through it, and that's a beautiful thing about having a DAO, and the beautiful thing about Web3 is that we can test all of these things simultaneously and just learn. Go, well, this actually didn't work for privacy. That was a horrible idea. Or, hey, this didn't actually make any money. We weren't able to build a community around it. Let's try this, try that. We're in this place now where we can figure out, okay, we've figured out how to make money off the data. Let's determine how much of that data we want to share, what data makes sense ethically to share, give people the right to share all of it and monetize it to the fullest potential, or none of it, and basically pay their way to use the platform because they want to pay for the value of the platform and not have to give up any of their data, or some shade of gray in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a beautiful approach where it allows people to pick whatever path makes sense for them, as long as they understand that, well, they understand that they get to choose, or they have the right to choose, and they understand what they're choosing.
Yeah. It's a new world, a brave new world that's developing. And as the data, you know, the realization of all of this data collection to the public, right? All of us being aware that this data holds value is a new concept to us, right? Because I think for so many years, most of us weren't even aware, and I would say most people still aren't aware, that their data is collected, categorized, and sold. But as the masses become more aware of that, it's going to be interesting how it shifts, right? And how people start protecting their data, and once they understand that they can, will they? I guess that's what I'm wondering is when you understand that you can protect it, will the masses?
Now, we're quickly running to the end of our podcast, as we often do. B-Man, I'd love to throw this one on you and ask, for those who haven't used YouHive, or for that matter, for those who are trying to determine whether or not it's meaningful for the crypto space, is there anything else you might want to throw into the conversation, or any other questions you might want people to ask themselves?
I mean, if you're tired of Facebook, then it is a great alternative. You just got to get all your friends and family to go over to it. And at least you'll get 200 coins, or I think 100 coins every time you bring them over. That's just the hard part of switching from Facebook to this or any other app.
I think you just said something there that's really important to the data ownership. It's really hard to switch over because Facebook makes it hard, mm-hmm. because all the things that you've created, mm-hmm. the pictures of your kids, the things that you've said, all the times you've shared your stories and your journey and your life connected with friends and family, Facebook owns that.
You own nothing.
You own nothing. Your Facebook owns the pictures of your kids. If you don't believe me, try to end Facebook right now.
Yeah.
And get all of your pictures. Go ahead. Try it right now. Jump off this podcast. Try to get all the pictures of your kids, all the things that you've chatted about right now.
Well, before you delete your account, scroll past the Doicoin page and give us a thumbs up or a quick comment before you dip out completely. Because we're riding that wave into Meta, baby.
Yeah, that we are.
Yeah, pretty soon it won't even be Facebook. It's already not, right? It's already Meta now, right?
Yep.
Yep. Here we go. And they're going to drag us all. Pretty soon, if you want to leave, if you want to leave Facebook, you're going to have to click into the metaverse. You're going to have to stand in a line, a long line, in your avatar, and you're going to have to stand there with avatars in front of you that look like monsters and cookie monsters, and then some lady that just looks just like herself. And you're going to have to stand in this line, and you're going to have to talk to someone that looks like a goblin, and you're going to have to get out, you know, fill out paperwork, bring in some, you know, who knows, utility bill. Bring in a Meta utility bill if you want out.
I love it. I feel like the next app that needs to be created this very moment. So another one of our podcast goals is I'm waiting for someone. We've talked about a couple times now. I can't wait any longer. We need a line in the metaverse. We need waiting rooms. We need lines. We need to make sure that before you can get on any ride, there's a 2-hour wait, and then you have to pay an NFT in order to jump the line. Mm-hmm. Come on, let's take the best part of the real world and put it into the metaverse.
Ooh, I just got an idea. When I'm standing in line, I need someone else in the metaverse to come by and dress like me and hold my place in line. There's going to be a business model made out of that. Watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like most things, you have to create both sides of the business model. So no matter what, you win.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we'll figure out how to do it. Well, gang, it has been a delight having everybody in. B-Man Jay, thank you for coming up here and helping us walk through UHive. As an ambassador of UHive, we appreciate you coming up and speaking about it. B-Man, man, a few words right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you coming in. We are going to be back here on Friday at 8 Central, and we would love it if you would join us. I don't think we have anything else to cover today. Corey, anything else that you must say?
Oh, my goodness. Like all things, you're drinking from the fire hose. You heard a lot. You thought about a lot. You got confused probably 42 times. We're all in the same boat with you.
It's okay.
Stay on the journey. Pick one thing. And start there. Like if it's downloading UHive, if it's jumping into maybe the CBDC bill, if it's just going down the rabbit hole with one thing, you're already moving forward to being an expert in the coming years.
Yeah. Well, I recommend jumping down the UHive rabbit hole and looking into that. And if you want to jump into the CBDC conversation, go look up Johnny over at Crypto and Caviar on Clapper. He loves CBDCs. That's one of his favorite things. So, you know, catch him up for that conversation. So until Friday at 8 Central, gang, for myself, Phil Ward, for Corey Fico, and for B-Man Jay, we invite you guys to be kind to somebody. It most certainly will change your day, and it could change their life. Till then, we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin, the crypto coin for the people, by the people.